Hello everyone, and welcome to the Institute of Leadership and Management's weekly news roundup podcast, where we take a critical look at a number of topical developments from the past few days with a leadership and management theme. I am Rod Jones, and in this podcast, we'll be looking at news up to the 1st of June 2020. Joining me to analyse these stories is Kate Cooper, Head of Research, Policy and Standards at the Institute. Hello, Kate.
Hello, Rod.
Well, my first task, Kate, is to ask, is your job killing you?
Absolutely not, Rod.
A new study from the Indiana University Kelly School of Business finds that our mental health and mortality have a strong correlation with the amount of autonomy we have at our job, our workload and job demands, and our cognitive ability to deal with those demands. When job demands are greater than the control afforded by the job, or an individual's ability to deal with those demands, there is a deterioration of their mental health and, accordingly, an increased likelihood of death, said Eric Gonzalez-Moulet, Assistant Professor of Organizational Behavior and Human Resources at the Kelly School, and the paper's lead author. COVID-19 might be causing more mental health issues, so it's particularly important that work does not exacerbate those problems, Gonzalez-Moulet said. This includes managing and perhaps reducing employee demands, being aware of employees' cognitive capability to handle demands, and providing employees with autonomy are even more important than before the pandemic began. Kate, what can leaders do to provide more autonomy to teams who are now working from home?
Well, immediately, the fact that you're working from home, if that's respected by your manager, gives you a lot of autonomy and control over your working day. You're not bound by office hours, being there at 9, leaving at 5. You can start early and finish early or stagger your working hours across the day. So I think it's very important, knowing that people are at home, that control over their working day can be so helpful. Any of us who've been stuck in a traffic jam will know how we see people desperate to have an alternative. They'll look for other routes, they'll do U-turns, because not having any control over what happens next is incredibly stressful for us. So the more we can build into jobs, choices, options, even as I've just advocated, it's about the time of the day that you do your work. That is supporting people's mental health.
Okay, thank you, Kate. Our next story asks, what can leaders do to prevent loss of young generation's talent? Young people whose prospects have been blighted by the COVID-19 crisis could be affected in ways that will follow them all the way up to retirement, according to two high-profile former leaders. Former Tesco Bank CEO Benny Higgins, now a member of the Scottish Government's Advisory Group on Economic Recovery, told MSPs that, in the wake of the outbreak, special measures should be introduced to protect young people from adverse career impacts. Former Joseph Rowntree Foundation CEO Dame Julia Unwin, also on the advisory group, added in her own contribution, one way or another, we need to find ways in which companies could step up and make a different sort of offer with support from government. Higgins and Unwin's message came just days after a report from the Resolution Foundation noted that a third of 18 to 24-year-old employees, excluding students, have lost jobs or been furloughed, compared to one in six prime-age adults. Similarly, 35% of non-student workers in the 18 to 24 age group are earning less than they were prior to the outbreak. Kate, what sort of offer should business leaders make to young people to ensure that their talent is not allowed to dissipate and that they don't become jaded with the job market?
Well, followers of the podcast series will know that some months ago we were talking about the impact on career ambition, if you like, of those people who were joining the job market in 2008 after the financial crash, and how much more risk averse they were than their colleagues who joined the job market before that. And joining a job market when there aren't many jobs is quite terrifying and makes one feel unwanted, unrequired. And that, of course, can be particularly scarring, if you like, when you're new to it, because that's your normal. You haven't known a time when you've been able to find a job more easily. And recognising it as a problem, and I think the more forward-looking companies are also going to appreciate that what COVID-19 has done, what lockdown has done, what the switch to so much home working, with companies saying they're never going to go back to huge offices that they expect people to turn up in every day. You can work anywhere in the world. All of a sudden, the constraints of geography have become far less, and we're finding ways to work across the world without actually having to travel. And so this generation, I think perhaps more than ever, those who are never going to attend university again, for example, because everything's going to be streamed, how are their vistas going to be open? So I don't think it's all bad news, but when that talent scarcity hits home and people are competing for talent, it's the ones that have been making their organisations attractive for young people, have been taking them on. Hopefully is quite a short-term problem in the life of organisations. And we've also got to remember, haven't we, a lot of people who were anticipating leaving the labour market have now found that their pensions have been adversely affected, so they might be staying a bit longer than they anticipated, giving a really diverse and multi-generational workforce that, as we know from our research, has its benefits. So it's not, do you think we tend to focus on young people, and absolutely we should be, but they're not the only people who are going to be unfortunately impacted by COVID-19.
Thank you, Kate. Our next story asks, how should leaders measure success against the backdrop of COVID-19. Amid the pandemic, senior figures must reframe the way they measure success, according to Penry Price, Vice President of LinkedIn Marketing Solutions. Price highlights the distorting effect that COVID-19 has had on schedules. For example, your annual or quarterly revenues are already far behind beginning of the year projections, so it's bad for both individual and company disposition to treat those metrics as the appropriate signals for achievement. No one needs to feel like a failure right now. With that in mind, he argues, the new metrics should underscore what marketers have already been talking about during this era of digital transformation: engagement. In a function like sales, that may mean, how many emails did I get returned today? How many people called me back? How many business people liked, commented on, or shared what I posted on social media about the state of things? All told, did my content create more engagement with my customers and prospects today than it did the day before? If so, it's a signal of progress and positivity, and you can build off it gradually as we start to find our way out of this rough situation. Kate, what can leaders in other professions take away from Price's assessment of his own, and are there other alternative ways of measuring success at this time?
I always feel a bit sorry for salespeople because they so easily get attention, and we're so quick to say, oh, you can measure what they do. You know, how many times have you phoned a customer? How many times has the customer phoned you back? And of course, a sales job is as easy or as difficult as the products and services that they're selling. And that's everybody in the organization's responsibility. So although Penry has chosen an area that one would think is immediately countable, if you like, I think there's a lot more to measuring engagement or thinking about appropriate metrics for your role. Now, I absolutely advocate the creation of ratios that are sensible for you. So it might be, how many emails do I get in a day? How many are really for me? How many have I been copied in gratuitously? And then start thinking about how I can change that if that ratio, those percentages don't work for you. So we can, in all of our jobs at that level, start thinking about ways in which we could measure what we're doing, and we could start looking to make improvements. I think one good way of looking for the measures would be to imagine, if somebody's taking your job, what would they start counting? What would they start trying to do differently? And if you can have that conversation with yourself, you might well find that you've got some of the measures there for you. So the idea is good, because as we know from our work with coaching, the idea of setting goals and actions, that forward momentum, is really important for maintaining morale and delivering performance. But you have to think so much in the context that it's happening, and we cannot take things out of context and really make any sense of them.
Thank you, Kate. Our next story is related in the sense that it is also about measurement, and this is a story by Jared Newman, writing for Fast Company, that looks at the growth of digital monitoring of employees as another existing work trend that has been accelerated by COVID-19. The Washington Post, NPR, and the New York Times have reported that computer monitoring software products have flourished during the coronavirus pandemic as companies try to keep tabs on far-flung workers. Once installed, these programs can track what websites employees are visiting, measure mouse movements, and even monitor keystrokes. David Hansen, the co-founder and CTO of Basecamp, argues that it's a backward approach to remote work. Instead of monitoring when people are at their desks or how much time they spend in certain programs, managers instead should look at the quality and quantity of the work employees are putting out. Kate, would you agree with Hansen that good managers measure outputs, whether that happens from the office or from home?
Absolutely. How on earth can you really evaluate the quality of somebody's contribution to the organization by how much time they spend sitting at their desk? Sounds so wrong, but so many people do take that as a useful measure, as we were talking about previously. Not a useful measure, in my opinion. And this software that's tracking all these movements, immediately it's taking micromanagement to a whole new level of micro, isn't it? But once you know what is being measured, it's very easy to manipulate them. What's to stop you having two computers, one that you do all the right things on and one that you go and visit the websites and move the mouse as often or infrequently as you think is expected of you? I think any measures like that are so open to manipulation. If managers are substituting software for trust, they have got to ask themselves, what sort of relationships have they got with people? It reminds me of McGregor's Theory X and Theory Y. And what we want to be is Theory Y managers, not Theory X managers.
Well, thank you, Kate. And that concludes this week's episode. Listeners can find further topical content in the News and Views section on the Institute's website at www.institutelm.com. And thank you once again, Kate, for your insights on these stories.
Thanks, Rod.